You're listening to David Bevan on 891 AM,
Digital Radio,
and the ABC Listen app.
Right now, though, want to pause for a moment and take a look at remote Indigenous disadvantage in the context of wider Australia. That's the name of a report which was released just a few days ago. The report found education and employment rates in remote and very remote Indigenous communities put them on par with countries such as Afghanistan, a nation divided by over 19 years of war. Poor health outcomes and severe overcrowding in housing is more reminiscent of sub-Saharan Africa than one of the wealthiest nations on earth. The situation is abhorrent and unacceptable. Were such conditions to exist in one of our major cities, it would be a national crisis. The person who wrote those words joins us now. Jacinta Dumbajimba Price, Deputy Mayor of Alice Springs and Director of Indigenous Research at the Centre for Independent Studies. Good morning to you.
Good morning, David.
You wrote these words after a lived experience. I mean, you weren't shocked, were you? You went out there and this is something that you've been exposed to for a very long time.
That's right. I mean, the sorts of conditions that are described, that you've just described, my direct family members live this way. There are a lot of those that I'm directly related to who do live this way out in remote communities throughout the Northern Territory. And I've lived a lot of my life understanding and you know, knowing and being related to people in these places and spending a lot of time in these remote communities as well. So, yeah, you know, it wasn't a surprise at all to understand what's going on when it came to looking at the data.
You describe it as a wicked problem. Why did you use the word wicked?
I guess because, you know, these are problems that are very difficult to overcome, and the fact that there are so many different problems that all impact one another at the same time, you know, that's why these are very wicked problems, and they've been around for some time now. And, you know, despite initiatives like Closing the Gap, there doesn't seem to be improvement in some areas as a result. So, yeah, it's been really difficult for many governments to try to address these issues. And I think there needs to be a different approach going forward if we're going to try to alleviate disadvantage for, you know, Australia's most marginalised.
What is driving the disadvantage?
Well, so what the paper really highlights is the fact that life in remote communities is completely different to life within urban settings and within our cities. And also, this marginalisation is not determined by one's heritage, by indigeneity, but the circumstances in which they live. And I think that's really important, because I think a lot of the focus, particularly with measures like Closing the Gap, has been largely around indigeneity and not placing the focus where the disadvantage exists. And in remote Indigenous communities, there are extremely high rates of crime. We found that for places where there's a population of more than 50% Indigenous Australians, the crime rate is at least double the state or territory average. But in places like Tennant Creek, for example, the crime rate in just that town alone is four times the territory average. So, you know, these statistics are important when it comes to trying to deal with these very, you know, dysfunctional issues which contribute to the marginalisation of Indigenous Australians in those communities.
You say the focus in the past has been on indigeneity. What do you mean by that? What does that emphasis mean?
Well, I guess it's similar to what the Yuthi Yindi Foundation submitted in put forward in their submission with regard to the distribution of GST for Indigenous Australians. And they sort of argued that, the distribution is based on, you know, people that can claim indigenous heritage are then counted, and therefore the consideration for distribution for addressing Indigenous people's needs is based on those people who can claim to be Indigenous, but not necessarily on need, if you like. So a lot of the resources were being pulled away from, smaller populations of Indigenous people, and not focusing on their specific need, which is, you know, in a lot of these remote communities themselves. And I think a lot of the policies that are being brought about are also, again, based on a person's heritage as opposed to their need. And that's where the focus needs to take place because, you know, I mean, someone like myself, I'm an Indigenous woman, but I'm not marginalised because I'm Indigenous, and therefore I don't require the sort of assistance, that a lot of these policies are designed around. I don't need that. And that's where I think we have gone wrong previously.
Oh, so are you saying that as an Indigenous woman who support is offered to you or services are offered to you and you're saying, well, I don't need them, but you're offering them to me because I'm Indigenous?
That's right. And the way in which, you know, the resources are distributed nationally is usually largely dependent on, you know, how many Indigenous people are in that area as opposed to their need. But certainly, you know, my own children, we're not in need because of our indigeneity. We're doing all right, just like, you know, the next sort of Australian who's doing okay.
Yeah. You break this down in your report into different, I suppose you call them portfolios, so education, employment, crime, domestic violence. What impact is that having? I mean, I suppose in some cases it's a symptom, and then in other cases it's a cause of poverty. It's a vicious cycle. And everything is related to everything else. I think everybody gets that. But in order to have a conversation, we break things down. Okay, let's talk about domestic violence. What impact does that have in remote and very remote Indigenous communities?
Well, it has a huge impact because in some states and territories, domestic violence and assault outstrip the rate of all other crimes. So you could imagine if that's what's going on in some of these very small communities, you know, the level of dysfunction that exists in those places is huge. And of course, it's going to affect things like employment. It's going to affect the rates in which children, you know, the school attendance, their ability to learn at school if their home life is dysfunctional, and you know, it's going to contribute to rates of incarceration and all those sorts of issues. So it has a huge impact, domestic violence and assault in a lot of these remote areas, particularly when it's outstripping rates of other crime, all other crime.
Jacinta, are there cultural issues which are driving domestic violence in remote and very remote communities?
Yeah, look, I mean, as somebody who has grown up very much understanding, you know, my culture, being involved with my family directly, I understand acutely the way in which traditional culture contributes to rates of violence, because in a traditional context, violence, the use of violence for social control is normal. It's normalised. Any small scale societies around the earth, you know, humans have always used violence as a means of social control. And because, you know, my people are still catching up with the modern world, if you like, there's still traditional values that are at play. There are things like payback. You know, if any premature death or illness is thought to have been caused through sorcery, so somebody has to be blamed and there has to be a punishment and payback for that. You know, there are parts of customary law that say that, you know, women and children can be beaten up if they accidentally come across men's sacred ceremony. There's a whole raft
happening. That is still happening in our communities.
Absolutely, it's still happening. It's still happening. My family members are directly, you know, exposed to it on a regular basis. You know, there's not a week that goes by that we don't hear about an incident that's taking place or somebody's getting the blame for somebody's death. And these things aren't acknowledged enough, you know, by the rest of the nation. We get a lot of talk about how violence isn't part of culture and that it's a result of colonization and racism, but nobody's actually providing any evidence to suggest that this is the case, but there is tons of evidence to suggest that it is part of traditional culture. I mean, there's the Ngarra Book of Law, which has been published by the Yolngu people, which sets out their, you know, their law, their customary law. And if you read it, you can see it's right there. It's written there. The punishments that exist for, you know, particularly women who do the wrong thing by their husbands and all that sort of thing. And as long as we ignore that, you know, the violence is going to continue. But we've got to, if we really care for marginalised Indigenous Australians, we will speak the truth. We will say, listen, we've got to consider doing things differently, changing our cultural values so that we don't accept violence. Because, you know, I mean, I see it every day in my own family, and it's an uphill battle. But, you know, we need the support of the rest of the nation behind us too.
We're talking to Jacinta Nampajimba Price. She's Deputy Mayor of Alice Springs and she's Director of the Indigenous Research at the Centre for Independent Studies. And last month, it was just in January, she released a policy paper. It's called Worlds Apart, Remote Indigenous Disadvantage in the Context of Wider Australia. Okay, so that's one portion of what's going on. You also look at school attendance and education. Mm. Now, how are we dealing with school attendance?
Not very well, I'd say. You know, I mean, nationally, we've got 82% school attendance for Indigenous kids on a national level. In terms of the Northern Territory, however, this declines further to 63%. The national rate of school attendance is 92% for non-Indigenous Australia. And, you know, it's well known. Warren Mundine has argued the fact that children need to be attending school for 90% of the time in order to be able to successfully gain an education. So 63% is really not good enough. And in some places, it drops even further than this. So children are clearly missing out on an education. And,
we would have schools in these areas. Are you saying that nobody's bothering to enforce truancy, or is that it's just, look, I'm a skinny white guy sitting in Adelaide from a middle class background. I have no idea of what it's like to try and run a school in these areas. And that's why we're talking to you. So, yeah. I mean, can you even apply the same mentality of, you know, truancy, how it would be policed in a city as opposed to a remote community? Explain what's going on, Jacinta.
Well, you know, truancy is a really tough issue in remote communities. Parents, it is the responsibility of parents to ensure that their children get to school. Unfortunately, this responsibility isn't met as well as it should. And I think there's a great also dependency in a lot of remote communities because of welfare, because of the fact that, when people aren't employed themselves, you know, if parents are employed, then you've got more opportunity for a child to be attending school. But the lack of employment contributes to it as well. And in a lot of these, you know, communities, because of this dependency, the welfare dependency, there's almost an expectation that someone else is going to take care of, you know, your kids. And this is another sort of attitude that certainly exists out in communities, but the policing side of it doesn't necessarily take place so much in communities. There's certainly not any sort of consequences for parents should they, not meet their responsibility and ensure that their children attend school. And also, again, if you've got the issue of domestic violence going on at home, well, then that's, you know, that level of dysfunction, that child is highly likely not to, you know, have a good attendance rate at school either. And aside from this, there's health, a lot of health issues that take place. And for kids that might actually attend school too, if they've got issues with otitis media, it's very difficult for a child with bad hearing to be able to learn. So there's a raft of issues there.
And then, of course, we get on to employment because, I mean, seriously, the kids aren't dumb. What's the point in going to school? Because I'm not going to get a job afterwards anyway. So and we could just tease this out and do a litany of terrible things.
Mm.
What's the answer?
Well, I mean, I've had a lot of conversations with Warren Mundine about the issue of jobs. There is opportunity for jobs out in communities. There needs to be more support, I believe, and encouragement in terms of being able to, Aboriginal people themselves being able to start up their own small businesses in communities. And I know there's a lot of hurdles with that, with being able to access their own land to create job opportunities. There's a lot of red tape to cut through. There's a lot of hurdles to jump and a lot of dealings with land councils that can prolong processes like that. I know personally individuals who have wanted to go into partnership with private enterprise to start up businesses, and the process has taken that long that they've given up in the end. But there are ways, we just have to be innovative in terms of how we get jobs going in remote communities. And it's difficult. It's the whole also getting people off welfare at the same time, and that's a huge task in itself, is breaking that dependency as well.
Jacinta, we've got to wrap it up. Before you go, this report's been out for it was released just last month, but it's been out for a while. I first saw it referred to in The Australian, I think on Australia Day. And I heard Tom Switzer from our sister network, Radio National, talking to you a few days ago. How many ABC programs have interviewed you about your report?
Just yourself and, of course, Tom Switzer with RN. That's all.
Did that strike you as odd?
It's very concerning. It's deeply concerning for me, especially because, I'm not just talking about statistics, but I'm talking about people in my family. I'm directly exposed to all of this. I know all about it, and I'm wanting to save people's lives. So it's deeply concerning that other parts of our national broadcaster haven't shown an interest in what I see as far more important and pressing issues than things like, changing the date of Australia Day, then changing words in an anthem, or expecting cricketers to do a barefoot, ceremony, whatever. Those symbolic issues do nothing whatsoever. They don't change the lives. They don't help toward changing the lives of marginalised Indigenous Australians. They don't help to save, if they saved a single life, I'd be all for it. But otherwise, these very difficult issues need to be addressed, and we need to be able to have open dialogue and respectful debate about these issues in order that we can find solutions together as a nation. So, David, I really, really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share this through ABC Adelaide.
Jacinta Napajimba-Price, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Deputy Mayor of Alice Springs and Director of Indigenous Research at the Centre for Independent Studies.